Chapter 14, we'll finish it today. I've saved one portion, the outline that I gave you, which we'll have online as well, so people can download that PDF file and have it to carry around, those that listen in other countries online. We're going to look at the downward spiral of Peter. It's interesting that we are studying on Wednesday nights the letter that Peter wrote to encourage and warn his brothers and sisters. And I've always thought it's wonderful to see these two things juxtaposed, because you get to watch him do it wrong. You see him forgiven and restored. And Jesus said, Peter, when you are restored, I want you to be the one that strengthens your brothers. And then we read 1 and 2 Peter, and we see him doing that very thing. God never warns us of danger because he hates us. I know that's a no-brainer, but it's amazing. That's the way people often receive warnings. Like God's mad at me. No, he warns us because he loves us. If he was mad at us, he wouldn't warn us. He'd just let us make our stupid mistakes and fall on our lips and say, there, serves you right. So whenever I see his warnings, I realize it comes from a place of love. It comes from a place of he knows me better than I know me. If I knew you better, and I was a better man, I'd tell you the ways in my life that I have fallen because I didn't pay attention to this very list. It's the reason I carry it around with me, because I know I'm not immune. Just because I think I'm strong, we're always overestimating our devotion and always underestimating our flesh. It's a common human trait. That's why we've been given the Holy Spirit. Because he has no delusions. He looks right at us and he knows what we're made out of. So, I said this to the group that met to pray this morning. My heart is always gripped when I teach this. Because, I don't know how many times I've taught this in the last 12 years. Every time we come to this story in the Gospels, I spend at least half of one of our studies looking at the downward spiral of steps to Peter's fall, because it's so typical of humans. I have had people whose names and faces flash through my mind every time I teach this. I love them. Some of them are back into addiction now. I've seen 7 or 8 families that completely disintegrated. They're not families anymore. All of them were people who sat here and heard these words and paid no attention. In fact, sometimes they heard the words more than once. That's not the end of the story. That's my prayer, is that it's not the end of the story. Even in Peter's story, he was restored. But when God warns us, it's to spare us grief. It's to spare us unnecessary pain. I asked the question, I can't remember if it was last Wednesday or last Sunday, about how many of you have learned things the hard way, and just about all of us raised our hands. And I would say, probably most of us said, I would rather not have learned the hard way. I'm glad that God was merciful. So I say these things as one who didn't pay attention for all the very same reasons Peter didn't. So I want us to look at it. I'm going to read the passage we're going to study. We'll spend about half our time looking in at Peter's downfall. Then we actually get to see what it doesn't look like a real big deal, looking at it from the horrible, compared to the horrible things in history like Adolf Hitler and Jeffrey Dahmer and stuff like that. It doesn't look like that big of a deal. But here's the thing. Peter loved Jesus with all of his heart. And Peter never completely got over his failure. It haunted him. That's the other thing Jesus is trying to protect us for, because even when we're forgiven, it gives the devil bullets to use against you. I know from experience. I have to fight a lot of unnecessary battles in my life because of something I did 25 or 30 years ago. I'm forgiven. I know I'm clean. I know it's not even in the book that God holds on me. But the more I grow close to Him and the more that I love Him, the more it hurts me. So I say all of that, not setting myself up in any way as immune to this. I carry this with me. So let's look at where we stopped last week. We stopped at verse 54. Actually, I'm going to read verses 53 and 54 of Mark 14. I'll read all the way to the end of the chapter. Then we'll look at the steps of Peter's downfall. And then we will study the mockery of a trial and the sad details of the failure itself and finish this chapter out this morning. They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests and elders and teachers of the law came together. And here's one of the steps to Peter's downfall. Peter followed him at a distance. Right into the courtyard of the high priest, and there he sat with the guards and warmed himself at the fire. That is the final step to Peter's downfall, was that he warmed himself at the enemy's fire. He had no business being there. He should have been with Jesus. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death. But they didn't find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. And then some stood up and gave this false testimony against him. We heard him say, "I will destroy this man-made temple, and in 3 days will build another not made by man." By the way, that's not really close to what Jesus said. Verse 59, I find kind of humorous. Yet even then, their testimony didn't agree. Even the liars, even the false witnesses couldn't agree with each other. I'll tell you later this morning why that is important. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you?" In other words, is this true or false? The story of my life would be different if you plugged my name into the next sentence. But Bob remained silent and gave no answer. I have made things so much worse trying to defend myself. I love Jesus. What a great model. I don't know how this takes muscles. This takes guts to do what Jesus did. First of all, I would have fried everybody by now if I was him. I mean, there would be a big pile of charcoal right there where the Sanhedrin meant, and what humans? But it says Jesus remained silent and gave no answer. And again, the high priest asked him. Here, Mark leaves out a very important detail. The other gospels say the high priest told him to swear. In other words, he told him to answer this question under oath, which meant that legally Jesus was forced to have to answer. "Are you the Christ," or Messiah, "the Son of the Blessed One?" We're going to see in this passage two titles. They should have quotation marks around them in your English Bible, although there's no such thing in Greek. They are phrases that the Jewish people use to speak of God without actually having to say God's name, because they figured God was so holy that even to pronounce his name was blasphemy and degraded him. So this phrase, "Are you the Son of the Blessed One?" was their one of the phrases for, "Are you the Son of God?" "I am," said Jesus. So much for what the Jehovah's Witnesses say, that he never actually claimed to be the Son of God. The narrative says contrary. "I am," said Jesus, "and you will see." I would have loved to have seen his eyes. I bet they snapped with fire. And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One. There's the other phrase for God without having to say his name. And coming on the clouds of heaven. Those are direct quotes from two messianic prophecies. We'll talk about it later. The high priest tore his clothes. When I was a kid, the church I grew up in, we used the Old King James Bible, which said he rented his garments. And I thought, why did he have to rent his garments? He was the high priest. He could have owned his own tux, you know. He didn't have to rent one. It means he tore his clothing, sign of outrage. Why do we need any more witnesses, he asked. You've heard this blasphemy. What do you think? And they all condemned him as worthy of death. This next part is so pathetic. These are the religious leaders of Israel. These are supposed to be men of holiness and dignity. Some began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him and struck him with their fists. They punched him and said, prophesy. In other words, tell us who punched you. And the guards took him and beat him. By the way, all of those things were violations of Jewish law, their own law, about how to treat a prisoner, even a guilty one. While Peter, by the way, these two vignettes should be on split screen in your movie. So while that's going on, the other screen is showing you what's taking place outside in the courtyard. While Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came by, the lowest form of life on the social, cultural scale in Israel would have been a servant girl. In fact, they weren't even treated like people. When she saw Peter warming himself, she looked closely at him. You can just feel the tattling about to come, can't you? You didn't have as many little sisters as I do. You also, I tattled last Sunday though, didn't I? So I can't complain. You also were with that Nazarene Jesus, she said, but he denied it. I don't know or understand what you're talking about. That phrase was the exact phrase used in a Jewish court of law as a formal denial of charges against you. Sort of like pleading the Fifth Amendment, kind of a way to dodge having to actually answer the question. He said, and he went out into the entryway. When the servant girl saw him there, that means she followed him. When she saw him there, she said again to those standing around, this fellow was one of them. And again he denied it. After a little while, those standing near said to Peter, surely you are one of them because you're a Galilean. And he began to call curses on himself, and he swore to them, I don't know this man that you're talking about. Immediately the rooster crowed the second time, and then Peter remembered. I have to tell you, those may be the three saddest words of the story of my mistakes in my life. Then Bob remembered. What didn't you remember 10 minutes earlier? What didn't you remember a month earlier or a year earlier? Then Peter remembered the word that Jesus had spoken to him before. The rooster crows twice, you'll disown me three times. And he broke down and wept. It's a very strong word. In Greek, he wept bitterly. He wept his guts out. It was a gut-wrenching, heartbreaking weeping. By the way, that was why Jesus warned him, so Peter wouldn't have to experience that pain. Jesus didn't warn Peter because Jesus was afraid that Peter was going to deny him and he's going to be crucified. He planned on yielding to the soldiers. He planned on placing himself on the cross. Restraint and betrayal were not necessary. He was just trying to spare Peter that pain. I was talking with somebody before the service about how this whole sequence of Peter's downfall was not an overnight thing. It never is. And part of the reason why we start the slow slide, and then by the time we start the slide where now we can't stop ourselves even if we want to, we didn't realize that we were sliding. So let's look at this. I always look at this soberly for all the reasons I said earlier. Let's look at this outline. It goes all the way back to a couple of weeks ago in our study, earlier in the story, but really, it goes back months ago. Chronologically, it goes back a year or two in Peter's relationship with Jesus. Remember, Peter, of all of the disciples, Peter was the only one that was publicly rebuked and interrupted by God and told him how out of it he was, trying to stop the plan of God. You know what? I have to admit, I have been rebuked publicly. I've been interrupted by God. Just the embarrassment of it was enough to make me really think twice. But you know, there's that sad saying, and it's one of those places in Scripture, you could have put my name in there as well, where it says, and Peter, not knowing what to say, said, you know what I mean? Peter, dude, shut your mouth. Spare yourself the embarrassment, but he didn't. But Peter's slide was an internal one. Five steps, just in case somebody doesn't have the outline. Number one is Peter didn't believe he was weak. Who told him he was weak? Was it the boys? Was it when they were standing around and arm wrestling each other to see which one of them had the biggest muscles? Was that the guy saying, oh, Peter, you loser? No, it was Jesus that told him he was weak. He didn't believe him. So not step one, he didn't believe he was weak. Step two, he didn't follow Jesus' advice to stay alert, to watch and to pray. Step three, he reacted emotionally in his flesh. I left room in your outline so that you could take notes and write some things in there, because we're going to look at each one of these. He reacted emotionally in the flesh to pressure. Step number four, he followed Jesus at a distance. I think that's when the slope all of a sudden gets so steep that now you can't stop your fall. You're so far away from Jesus, you can't even reach out to grab him, keep, you know, to slow your fall down, so to speak. Followed Jesus at a distance. And step five, he warmed himself at the enemy's fire. By the way, this sequence could be stopped at any time. The problem is the farther you go down the slope, the harder it is to stop. And we don't do this in a vacuum. We have an enemy who wants to capitalize on every foolish thing we do, turn it into as much damage as possible. People don't like to talk about the devil. To be honest with you, I don't like to talk about the devil. But you know what I always think of? Peter was the one who later said to the people reading his letters, he said, Satan goes about like a roaring lion, and your lunch. So be aware of that. And he knows from experience. Any of you remember Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom? Anybody here old enough to even know who Marlon Perkins was? I just remember he drove a Land Rover sometimes, and I love that. And he got to wear cool clothes. He seemed like a little bit of a wimp to me for a guy that went out and, you know, on safari, but he went out on safari. Here I am. So, you know, safely, no lions around here. So apparently he was a better man than me. But I remember every time they showed predators, especially lions, stalking a herd of animals, the lions just sat there and they watched. You know what they were watching for? Who was wounded? Who had a habit of falling behind the herd? Who sort of wandered off? And those were the ones they watched, the lions. No lion in his right mind is going to attack a full bull wildebeest, if that's what they're called, in the middle of a herd. The predator watches for the one that's wounded, watches for the one that's not paying attention, watches for the one that falls behind. And the first step to Peter's downfall goes way, way back. Peter actually did not believe that he was weak. I wrote down in my notes, why? Why didn't he believe he was weak? The answer might surprise you. This is the painful thing that God showed me about myself. When I've made my worst mistakes. Peter didn't think he was weak because he compared himself to other people. You know what you can do? It's really easy. I'm an expert. You can look at all the people that do things you think you'd never do and feel superior. You can look at people who have personality problems or temper problems or lust problems or, you know, people, and you can look at that and you can feel smug and think, well, I would never do that. You know what happens? Whenever you have that thought in your head, I would never do that, somewhere the angels are dialing 911 because they know pretty soon you're going to need an ambulance. Peter compared himself constantly to other people. So he didn't think he was weak. Oh, man. I cringe whenever I hear this phrase. I've heard it from men. I've heard it from women when they were being warned. I've heard them say, I'm not like other people. Or, I don't have that problem. Said it myself. And that's the first step to folly. Step two was he didn't follow Jesus' advice to stay alert. Jesus gave him so many warnings. We looked last week in Luke 22 where Jesus point blank said, Peter, no matter what you think about your devotion, you're the one that needs prayer right now. It's a comforting passage in one respect because Jesus told Peter he was going to fail and he was going to be restored and he had a job for him to do. But I don't know if any of you have made the kind of mistake in your life or mistakes in your life that, like I said earlier, even though you know you're forgiven, even though you know the delete button has been pressed and on God's computer screen that doesn't exist, I know what I did. Other people know what I did. The devil knows what I did. And you can never get away from it. It is like handing a Mossberg street sweeper, you know, multi-action shotgun and about 1,000 rounds of ammo to your enemy. You've just given him ammunition to use against you. God would certainly love to spare us. I believe that God wants to teach us with the least possible amount of pain necessary to learn. Some of us are so bullheaded, it takes the least possible amount of pain, is a lot of pain, and he would rather spare us. By the way, we're not going to ever set a standard here that, you know, if you're going to be part of this church, you can't ever fail. First place, you wouldn't have a pastor, and the building would be pretty much empty. But the warning comes with love. It's interesting, you listen decades later to the words that Peter says in his epistles, and they're filled with tenderness, and they're filled with still with grief. Oh, you guys, he's saying, please, 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 don't be like I was. And I'm passing that on to you. Jesus said, Peter, you need to be paying attention, buddy. You need to be plugged in. That was what the whole watch, which means stay alert, we looked at last week there in Gethsemane. That's what that whole thing was about. Peter, You're not paying attention. Why was Peter not paying attention? Not watching and not praying. He didn't think he was weak. You don't guard the places you think you're strong. I mean, that was one of the hardest lessons I've learned in my life. But the minute that you fall on your lips and you realize, whoa, didn't see that coming, I'm going to have to watch that. Of course, the enemy always wants to go, like I said, for the maximum amount of damage that he can get away with. Peter didn't follow the advice to stay alert and to pray because he didn't really think he was weak. You relax your guard when you think you're strong. Been there, done that. I always tell the story at this point, it's in my notes, about the Great Wall of China. Ever seen the Great Wall of China? Even in pictures, I saw a documentary on it on the Travel Channel. It's a monumental feat of construction and engineering. It's absolutely boggles the mind when you consider the tools they had to work with and the terrain that they built this wall that went for miles and miles and miles. Do you know how the wall was breached by the enemies of the dynasty that built that? They never did breach the wall. They just bribed the guards at the gates and walked right in. All that effort to build the wall was unnecessary because they didn't guard the gates properly. Are you sweating yet? Boy, I tell you, listen to the tuggings of the Lord. Don't blow them off because he knows the future. He said, Peter, remember he came back and all, to be fair, all the disciples were sleeping. They all wimped out. They all ran away at one point. Jesus knew the effect it was going to have on Peter. When he came back that first time, when he told Peter, James, and John to watch with him and to pray with him because he was in agony. Remember, he fell on his face and he kept crying out, Daddy, Daddy. And then he came back and found Peter sleeping. He said, Peter, you? Haven't you heard anything I've said, buddy? This is not the time. Peter, you have no idea what's just around the corner. You have no idea the lion that's stalking you at this moment. I've seen people, I'm watching people right now that I love. Absolutely flirting with disaster. I don't think if they had any idea how much their enemy hated them and how much he wanted to destroy, they'd be on their knees. They'd be at every time the doors were open, they'd be here. They'd have their Bibles cracked open on the seat next to them in their car. They would be pumping iron spiritually if they knew. If you knew there was an Al-Qaeda cell in the woods near your house and right above their tactical table, they had a picture of you pinned up, how would you go to the grocery store? First of all, you'd trade your Chevy station wagon in on a tank, probably. Have it armor plated or something. Wouldn't you pray every time you set foot out there in enemy territory? If you were smart, you would. I do. I have to. Because I didn't. I don't think there was any point I really understood up until horrible failure in my life. I didn't really understand how much the devil wanted to destroy me. I felt pretty smug. And that's a mistake. So Jesus said, you got to pay attention, buddy. And Peter didn't. He didn't listen to the repeats. Step 3 may not seem like a big deal. We looked at it last week when Jesus was arrested and Peter, flailing, grabs a sword and whacks off the ear of an insignificant person who is probably running away. Step 3, Peter reacted emotionally in his flesh. It's not the first time he reacted emotionally in his flesh. It's just the first time he had a sword, which he wound up with the wrong response to the wrong enemy. It's the old deflection thing. It's like the devil saying, look over here, look over here, look over here, when he's coming around this other way. And you wind up reacting to the wrong enemy. Usually it's another person. You wind up hurting somebody that you love. And that's not who you should be fighting. That's not where the battle is. The battle is with your spiritual enemy. Remember when, right after Peter was had his nickname changed to the Rock there at Caesarea Philippi, the very next interchange with Jesus, after Jesus said, Peter, flesh and blood doesn't reveal stuff to you. Good for you, buddy. You're listening to your Heavenly Father. The very next interchange, Jesus looked at Peter and said, get behind me, Satan. Get behind me, Satan. Because right now you do not have in mind the things of my Father. Fleshly things. I have to tell you that every time you purpose in your heart, and I know some of you are doing it right now, every time you purpose in your heart, that's it. I'm pressing in. I'm going to get closer. I'm going to spend more time with Jesus. Okay, I know. I'm going to do it. Every time we purpose in our hearts to do that, there will be resistance. Count on it. How many times have you had an argument with somebody that you love on the way to church? Sometimes it's so silly, it's unbelievable, the silly things. But do you understand? I mean, I'm by myself now. So that's not a battle. But I had a battle with the computer this morning when I came in really early. It's that enemy going like this. It's that resistance to get you out of sync with the Spirit of God. It's amazing what we will fall for. I've seen the devil throw one thing at people who are strong people, throw one thing at them and derail them for a year or 2 years before they shake themselves awake and go, wait a minute, I know what's happening. This is a distraction. And you're trying to deal with it in the flesh, and I tell you, anytime you're trying to deal with it in the flesh, you're always going to have the wrong response to the wrong enemy. The thing to do is to press in closer to Jesus. Peter didn't. Step four, he did follow, but he followed at a distance. Do you see? Maybe I'm just overanalyzing this because I have lived this. But do you see the subtle little trap? He followed, but he followed at a distance. I'm still a Christian. I'm still a follower of Jesus. Yeah, but where's Jesus and where are you? And the point of fact was Peter was closer to the enemy than he was to Jesus. And that's always a dangerous place to be in a battle, folks. Number one ploy of any predator. Take it from Marlon Perkins. Number one ploy is distraction. You know, the lion will sit downwind so you can't smell him. He'll be in the tall grass. He's not going to trot out around the herd and say, hi, I am your relentless enemy. I have already prepared supper. You're the main course. No, that's not the way it happens. See, here's the thing. If I allow the sequence to go this far, when the actual push comes to shove moment happens, where I have a choice to make the right choice or the wrong choice, and the answer is going to be devastating if I make the wrong one, sometimes you're so far away, you've weakened yourself so much that you don't have what it takes to make the right choice. And our enemy knows that. Distraction and isolation. Remember the wounded wildebeest? Watch and see who hangs behind. Watch who sees who when the whole herd runs. That I've seen a film of a lion spooking the herd just to see who runs slower. And that's the one they watch. Am I scaring you? I hope so. Because it's serious. Jesus said that the enemy, the thief, comes to steal and to kill and to destroy. He's not playing games. Now, greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world. That's the whole story. That was true of Peter. But why did Peter fall? Because he wasn't listening to the one who was greater that was in him. He wasn't feeding the Spirit. He wasn't responding to the Spirit. He was ignoring the Spirit. You followed at a distance, and when you do that, you're isolated. Can I tell you what happens? When you are distant from Jesus and you're isolated, you get lonely. And I promise you this, when you are lonely, Satan will provide comfort.